Welcome to the Fourth Age, a Wheel of Time podcast, brought to you by DragonMount.com.
The Wheel of Time is an epic fantasy series that is written by Robert Jordan.
Currently, there are 11 main books in the series and one prequel novel.
Robert Jordan is working on the final book, currently titled A Memory of Light.
And the Fourth Age podcast is dedicated to that series.
To contact us, please visit our website at www.dragonmount.com/podcast.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 19. This is Ben, and we will be discussing Tuon this week. We've got some crazy theories, some fan feedback. Here with me is Carrie.
Hey, everyone. I would just like to announce that we have found an excellent volunteer to help us edit the show. We're going to try and make sure that the audio sounds great for everybody. And also this way we can try and make sure that our podcast gets out regularly, which we know is very important to all of our fans. This volunteer, his name is Ben Chase. So now we have Ben number one, who's our podcaster, and Ben number two, who is editor.
I'm Ben number one.
Yeah. He has lots of editing experience, and he wanted me to tell everybody that he is extremely excited to be involved with the podcast. He's kind of going to be working in the shadows, but we would just like to say that we really appreciate his help, and that we are so excited to have him on board. We also have Andrew with us here tonight.
Hello, everyone. In the way of news for this week, I have a quick reminder that the deadline for submitting short stories or artwork for the Dragon Mount Anthology is October 31st. For those of you who haven't heard about it, the Dragon Mount Writers Guild is collecting original short stories, sorry guys, no fan fictions, and original cover and insert art in order to create a publishable collection. Once finished, all the proceeds made from selling the anthology will go to the Mayo Clinic to benefit amyloidosis research. Anyone who is interested in making a submission and possibly having their work published can find all the information they need on the Dragon Mount Writers Guild forum at www.dragonmount.com/forums/ in the organization section.
All right. Unfortunately, Jason cannot be with us. The last we heard, he is trapped in a stasis box and he can't get out. So until he breaks free, we're going to have to move on without the Wheel of Time journal, but it will be back with Jason whenever he returns and escapes. So right now, we're going to go ahead and do some fan feedback.
So now we have a spoiler warning for anybody who hasn't got too far in the books. We very possibly could be talking about some of the newer books or anything that's happened in the last book, Knife of Dreams. We're probably going to be giving away lots of little spoilers, so you might want to turn this off if you do not want to be spoiled.
Welcome to Carrie's Fan Feedback of the Week.
I would like to thank Mark for this next voicemail.
Hi, my name is Mark Kennedy. Great job on the podcast, guys. Wanted to give you my crazy theory for how the whole thing's going to end. Combines a couple of things. He brought up a number of times about Rand needing to get over his problem with women. Well, I think his kids are going to be taken, and they're going to be killed by one of the female Forsaken. This is going to throw Rand into such a rage that he will get past that block of his. And I think he will free the Dark One. He has to. He breaks the seals, as Egwene saw in one of her dreams. And the way it will end is sort of the way it began, that he will link with Olivia, and they will burn each other out, forming a new Dragon Reborn Mount. That's my theory.
So, what do you guys think about that?
It's a good theory. You know, that's one of the one of the places where there's a lot of different theories about Rand and how he's gonna, you know, get over his hump of killing women and, you know, just having a difficult time with that, and you know, combining that with the end time, with the you know, the last battle and his kids, he combines them all into one theory, which is pretty interesting. I like my theory personally, which is Moraine is going to come back and she's going to be the one to teach him. So I don't agree with the theory completely, but it's certainly interesting nonetheless.
Yeah, I particularly think it's kind of it's an interesting tie-in, and it leads into that once again the entire, you know, twice dawns the day and, you know, twice his blood will be shed, or however the prophecy actually runs. It does kind of give that other, well, maybe that's just going to be the last final little straw that's just going to, you know, push Rand to do exactly what he has to do. So it's really interesting, and I guess the only way we're going to find out is when the 12th book comes out and we can read and find out.
I kind of think maybe I never thought of it like they're going to take his children and actually murder them. But maybe they could do, it could be a twist like where Elaine is captured while she's still pregnant, and that could get him, if it's one of the female Forsaken, it could get him in a rage to go and rescue her. And because I've always thought that maybe the, you know, that prophecy was in fact her giving birth, and that would be his blood on the rocks. And then it says red on black, because I know I've gone in on this before about the prophecy thing, but if her children or their children are the twins from the horn that are supposed to be thrown out again into the pattern when they're needed, and they also are the dawn, they're heralds of a new era, so maybe instead of killing the children, they force Elaine to go into an early labor, and I think the children would be okay. Maybe Elaine won't make it. I don't know, but it could still enrage him enough to kill a female Forsaken. But there's also the other part he said about, what do you think about him? He thinks he's going to link with Olivia, and that they're going to burn each other out after the linking and form a new dragon mount. That should be a crazy theory.
Yeah, that's a little.
Yeah, it's not that crazy, but yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy. That's that qualifies as crazy theory material. it's possible. I like if that happens, it sort of eliminates Luz Theron from the entire picture. It doesn't really have him tied into it. And after playing up Luz Theron in Rand's head for the last, you know, five books, I think ever since book six is whenever we first heard Luz Theron. Maybe it was five, but you know, last several books, he's been playing it up. He's got the other voice in his head to just have a ending without Luz Theron being, you know, majorly involved would be, in my opinion, a little disappointing. But
Well, I mean, I think there was that one thing about the one, either a vision or a dream. It was a vision from Min, you know, seeing two men and they kind of merge into each other, and then one of them lives and one of them dies, and it's odd, but I don't know. It will be interesting to see how that works out, I guess.
Yeah, I just thought of something else. He says that a female Forsaken is going to kidnap his kids, right? Is that what he said in the?
I'm not sure if he actually uses. Did he actually say? I think that's what he meant, but I think he said that his children would be taken or kidnapped and killed. But I think he meant by a female. But when I heard it, I could have just bypassed that. But I don't think he actually said female. But I think that was the point.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. There's not that many female Forsaken that are out and about to kidnap right now. I mean, Grendel and Mogideon are sort of bound to Moradin. They do whatever he says. Missana's in the tower. Semerog's captured. There's not that many. Lanfear's gone. She's bound.
Grendel?
I don't think there's
any. Okay, I gotta reread the last book. Grendel's bound too?
To Moradin?
Yeah.
I didn't know if she was not in a quite Kura
bound,
Serva, but she
was bound
to serve him, yeah.
Yeah, but he didn't have like her like a mind trap or anything. I mean, he's Nayblizz or whatever, right?
I think he is Nayblizz, yeah.
Kind of okay. But they're all sneaky little buggers. She doesn't have. She'll do what
I guess it's true.
I mean, you know, they're all in for it for themselves. So unless they have to, even Mogideon did a little bit of what she wanted to with Nynaeve in the boat when she wasn't supposed to be doing it, and he has a mind trap with her.
A little bit. I don't know. I think if they disobeyed on such a grand scale, though, I can't imagine that,
true.
You know, disobeying the Nayblizz just that out and out, you know.
Do you really think that Samurog is... Okay, now we're completely going off the feedback, but that Samurog is actually captured and that that's it for her? That she's out of the running? That she's out of the big fight? I don't think so. I think it went too easy. There's got to be more
coming. I don't know. She's in Cadswain's hands, and Cadswain's pretty competent at stuff like that. I mean, the way Elaine, Egwene, and Nynaeve held Mogideon, you knew that something bad was going to happen. I mean, they were just so, in my opinion, careless, you know, just having her right there in front of everybody. I don't think Cadswain will be... Well, first of all, she's not bound to secrecy. She can just say, hey, this is Myssana, she's mine. And nobody's going to argue with Cadswain. But I just don't think she's inept enough to give her up. So I think she's out of the picture, personally.
There was something you said, Ben, and it triggered something in my brain with... Uh-huh. The three of the female Forsaken serving Moradin. Right there in the last book, we had those images where Rand got full images of Moradin, and Moradin looked surprised.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not wondering if it's possible, because of the weird link that's kind of been established between them, if maybe Moradin might not be able to see Elaine, and that's how he knows that she's connected to Rand and would be able to then send like Mogadian or someone to go capture her.
Yeah.
That's it's very possible. It's reaching pretty far, but it makes sense, you know.
Who knows?
Yeah, it certainly fits, you know, logically. It's not a connection RJ couldn't make. I mean, it's I like that theory. That's good.
Yeah, and I think that this was another caller that we talked about before, but talked about how thinks that Elaine might die, because he keeps going on saying in the books how she, you know, she says, oh, I'm going to be safe because Min says my children, you know, are healthy and all this stuff. But possibly that doesn't mean something can't happen to her and still deliver, or the children could still be okay. So it could be true that they do kidnap her, and maybe the children survive and she doesn't.
Yeah, I was just going to say, she's not above getting herself kidnapped, as we found out from last book.
But it just bugs me how she's always like, oh, yeah, I'm going to be fine. I can do anything. I can go do all this stuff because I know I'm going to be okay. It just seems a little too cocky, you know, it just...
But on the other hand, she just did get kidnapped, and she's got Birgitta watching her, and Avienda's there, and she's going to be pretty stern with her, I'm sure.
But Avienda's gone. So, now, right?
I guess, yeah, she is. Yeah, she's going back to the Wise Ones, isn't she?
It's just her.
Yeah.
And maybe she'll still be okay, but she still could get kidnapped.
It's true.
I don't know. Well...
Yeah, one of the only things that, for me, that tells me that Elaine will probably survive is one of the original visions for Min said that she saw the three women standing on a bier over Rand, or what appears to be Rand's body.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
there's kind of that little thing, but who knows? Because once again, it's a bit of interpretation. I don't think we completely get, because I think Rand cuts Min off on that one. It's before he really knows Min, and he says something like he doesn't want to know, and then he runs away, and she's laughing and something.
Yeah, that was like way early in the books, but when he was still freaked
out.
Book
one,
that was, I think, when she first was telling him what she saw, I think.
Yeah.
And but that could happen before the kidnapping.
it's true.
Because that, I think that happens when, in my, you know, because I've said...
At the end of the last battle, yeah.
No, I think that it's before that.
Oh.
I think that's when, because I have this whole little theory that Rand is going to fake his death somehow, and that everyone's going to think he's dead, but he's really not. Or maybe he is, but Olivia, because it says that she's going to help him die, maybe she can do something to where everybody thinks he's dead, but he's really not dead. Or something, I don't know. I really don't have the whole thing Well, that's what I thought at first, that she could give him some herbs that, you know, it seems like he's dead, but he's not. But it does say that Olivia is supposed to help him die. So I think that it's going to be for some particular reason. So I see them standing over his funeral bier at that time. That's what I'm thinking. Because I don't think everyone thinks he's going to die. I don't think he is going to die at the end. I just think he's been thinking it, and he always thinks, well, I'm not going to be able to survive. I'm not going to be able to survive. And everybody thinks he's going to die. I just think that it's not going to happen that way. I think that he will live. but mm-hmm. possibly in some way he is going to die, in or if it's faked or whatever. So I think that's when they're standing over him. So it could happen before the last battle. So some kind of plot, some kind of plot twist.
I like the idea of Nynaeve discovering a weave to raise the dead. Just because it's never been done, and, you know...
The same,
just like,
yeah.
Like just like they said, you can't heal someone who's stealed. You can't raise the dead. Well, Nynaeve doesn't like to be told she can't do something.
But that would just go against the order of life, like how things are supposed to...
I guess it's possible.
That's kind of creepy.
Yeah, the weave would probably only have to be able to work if the person died an unnatural death or something.
Yeah, there would have to be something for it. Like, it would have to... there would have to be some kind of rule to it, because otherwise it would just be you could bring anybody back.
I guess that's true. That's true.
But maybe it could be, okay, maybe if it's, like you said, an unnatural death, or maybe if it's killing by a certain...
Yeah.
Some type of weave or something, yeah. That could... Something. But yeah.
Wow,
we're gonna go to the next, to the next one, so we don't...
Good question,
take up
because
too much
it started
time.
A big conversation.
Yes, it did.
Very good. Thanks, Mark. And this next one is from Dante. And I would like to thank Dante for sending this in, and I'm glad that you enjoy the podcast.
Hi, guys. This is Dante Collins from Palmdale, California, and I'm calling because of the podcast last week about Galad. I was just going to say that I think that his role... becomes now that his situation with the White Cloak is as it is, and through the book it seems like all your major groups become a part of the big picture for the last battle, and now through Galad the White Cloaks can be used to support the Dragon Reborn. Also, as far as what he does with the relationship now that, you know, it becomes known that he's Rand's older half-brother, he may feel some sort of responsibility towards him, and a need to protect him, being that they do have a blood relation, and that could play out in the last book as well. So that's just my opinion. We'll see if it actually plays out. So thank you, and good job with your podcast. I really love listening to it.
Honestly, I've always kind of thought that the White Cloaks probably the past couple hundred years really kind of got astray from their origins. And I kind of think Galad has the potential in him to be able to bring them back around to what they're really supposed to be. And that could, you know, that could lead it in. You know, he's leading a section of them. I mean, it's not all of them, but... You know, he's leading some of them to the last battle, and, you know, whether or not he feels responsible for Rand, you know, will probably tie into whether or not he just feels that it's the right thing. You know, it's what is right for the world.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I see him.
I think he'll probably be torn between responsibility for Rand. I'm not sure even if he'll feel that much responsibility for Rand, but I'm sure he'll definitely feel responsibility for his men that he's got, you know, underneath him that he's leading. So he's probably going to make sure that Rand doesn't, you know, just send him into a slaughter, like what happened with the one White Cloak. I can't remember his name, but it was in the end of Book 2. He led him into Shan Chan and, you know, just got his men totally butchered, and he knew it was going to happen, but he sent it anyway. I don't think he wants to repeat that, you know? That's the type of thing he wants to avoid.
Yeah.
So he very well could stand up to Rand and say, hey, you're not going to send my men, you know, here because I don't want them getting slaughtered.
Yes, so. Obviously we do know that that's where Galad is headed, that he knows that that's the right thing to do, to bring his White Cloaks in to help with the last battle with Aes Sedai. He knows that they're all going to be together. He will be in support of Rand. I do think that when he is going to learn, I know that everybody, it's going to have to come to a head, and he's going to learn that Rand is his brother or half brother. And he probably will feel that he has to protect him, but over and above all, like Elaine says over and over again, it's that he has to do the right thing. And I think that, well, maybe he will want to protect his men, but I think that over that, he's going to know that the right thing, no matter what, is to make sure that we win the last battle. That so some people are going to have to die. And I think he's going to recognize that and know that, yes, he's going to have to fight alongside Aes Sedai and Ashaemen as well. And he's going to have to follow Rand. Like, he's going to have to follow. He can lead his men, but he's going to have to follow to do what has to be done, because that's the only way they're going to win. Is Rand is going to have to unite everybody. Matt can help with the battle plans. I mean, it has to be one army fighting, and I'm sure Glad is going to realize that that's what he has to do to win. So die, but either that or live in a world with, you know, the Dark One. So who wants that? Obviously not the White Cloaks. So, you know, and then I think hopefully maybe Glad will live, and through him, the White Cloaks are going to be not so perverted like they are. Like, they're, like you said, they've changed and grown into something what they weren't to start with. And so I think that with him, it's going to, you know, the version of how their hatred they have, they're just so, they have all this hatred built up inside them, and I think that they're gonna get back to their roots, to what they're about, like walk in the light. That's what it's all about. And
it's true,
you know,
they should walk in the light. But I actually am gonna disagree a little bit on that one.
Okay.
I think the White Cloaks are gonna be gone.
Really?
Completely.
There's no room for them.
At the end of the Second Age, there wasn't any, there weren't White Cloaks back in the Second Age, were there? There were just a fairly new thing.
It was new, yeah.
So, just like no order survived that long, you know, throughout the Breaking and throughout all the stuff that happens whenever a new age is created, I think that the White Cloaks and a lot of the normal order of things, probably not the White Tower, but, you know, just things like the White Cloaks and maybe the Illuminators Guild, but they're all going to get wiped out, and people are going to have to rediscover all this stuff again, you know, like rediscover fireworks, you know, rediscover the beliefs and texts or whatever it is of the White Cloaks, and there might be something, you know, a new group based off of the White Cloaks, but it won't be the White Cloaks, because, you know, whenever a new age comes, it's such a violent tearing and rending and just so, you know, tumultuous that no real organization survives that. So
that's true. And also, I think so many people have built up. You hear the name White Cloaks and most people do not respect it. So
no.
Maybe there will be a bunch of, you know, people who were formerly White Cloaks, and they are going to maybe be some type of police or something, but maybe they will become something else, or not White Cloak anymore. I don't know. I haven't really thought about it that way, but that is true that happens. So after talking about some of those little theories, we can go right into some crazy theories.
Welcome to Ben's Crazy Theory of the Week.
Well, I tell you what, we've already been discussing some crazy theories already. But this one is actually pretty crazy. I like it. It made me go, oh my gosh, that's an awesome idea. The first time I read it, I happened to disagree with it, but it's a good one. This one was emailed in to us. It was sent by Amir. Thank you very much, Amir. He sent us a big, 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 long email. And this is one of the things I gleaned from it, so thank you. And don't forget, if you would like to send in any emails about your crazy theories, podcastdragonmount.com, you can send them in. All right, Amir's theory is this. He believes that Rand, he's talking about Rand and his being Tavirin, how he has been the strongest Tavirin, it says often in the books, the strongest Tavirin since Ardor Hawkwing, and even, you know, more so than him. He believes that Rand is so strongly Tavirin that simply by hanging out with Matt and Perrin, his Taviran-ness, so to speak, has rubbed off on Matt and Perrin, that originally the pattern had not set them out as Taviran, and that by hanging out with him, he believes that they have become Taviran by, you know, hanging out together and living together all their time and being such good friends. Very interesting theory. I like it a lot. It's crazy. But I just don't think that's the way Taviran work. I think if the pattern could be so easily, well, if the wheel could be so easily changed, you know, by just, you know, somebody rubbing off on each other, I think it would just, you know, Taviran is ultra, ultra powerful thing. I think Varen talked about it in Book 8, how just strongly Taviran changes everything around it. And if we had people creating sort of renegade Taviran going off creating their own, you know, version of reality, not really their own version of reality, but still sort of, you know, bending all the things to the way they want it, it's it'd be chaos. It's just not the way I think Taviran work. What do you think?
Well, also, something else is, Rand is obviously and always had been extremely close with Matt and Perrin, but why wouldn't it have rubbed off on, like, Egwene or Tam, his father?
That's true.
His father spent the most time with him out of anybody. So it's an interesting theory, but the only thing that I could see that would make them stick out is not only because they were together, but because they were born so close to each other. But I don't think that's the way the pattern works either. I don't think that would contribute to it. I think that it's because the pattern knows these things to help Rand be what he is, and that, you know, they're kind of like one great force split into three, where Rand is the tip of the triangle, but he needs Matt and Perrin as well. So they're Taviran to work and twist things around to what has to be done to help Rand get to the last battle.
It also makes the situation sound more dire if, you know, if the world is so messed up that one man just isn't going to do it. We need three Taviran in order to get this thing straightened out. You know, it just makes the situation seem all that worse, which it's pretty bad. So it makes sense they'd need three.
Yeah, I totally, I totally think that they aren't Taviran by chance at all. As a matter of fact, as we've kind of seen in the last couple of books, I think both Matt and Perrin, even though indirectly, are actually mentioned in prophecies from other places. Yeah, like the Shanshan prophecies are just, you know, talking about the Wolf King and when he wields the hammer, and I could have sworn there was one prophecy somewhere about, you know, the gambler or the Lord of Battles or something, and, you know, referring to Matt, and those just kind of
And if anybody, just to add this in there, because I think that's very interesting and I know what you're talking about and I can't remember specifics, but if any of our listeners out there know exactly what those prophecies were or where page numbers or anything books they were in, because that I would like to read up on that, because we have a little bit, we're going to do other shows. We did a prophecy show, but we kind of split it up so we could do different things, so it would be neat to add that in there somewhere if anybody knows where we could find that, any prophecy that would lead to Matt or a Perrin as well. So please email us,
let us know.
So this week we're going to discuss Tuon. Next week we plan on doing a show on Shanshan itself and going a little bit more in depth, but this week we're just going to discuss Tuon and the sneaky little vixen that she is. She's just so fun. I love reading about her, so I don't know.
See, to me, I find her rather irksome. She she has the arrogance of royalty, but not like the I don't know, not the light demeanor that's, you know, like Elaine has. You know, Elaine is, you know, fun and sometimes whimsical and just, you know, a lot more, you know, lighthearted about some things. You know, yeah, she's strong, yeah, she's cool, but, you know, she can, you know, still be more lighthearted. Tuan, she's just, I don't know, more conniving. She reminds me more of Nynaeve. It's true, but she's so wrong for Matt. You know, I mean, it's like they are the antithesis of each other.
I kind of see that. I kind of also see, though, everything we've seen of Tuan so far has been her being really set on the goals that she's got, you know, the coming back and beginning the return and all of this. We've not really seen what she does for fun. We've not seen her other side if she does have it. And I mean, who knows? She might be a wild child, you know, that's just right for Matt. It's just us and Matt don't even know it yet.
Well, kind of. Okay, so I can kind of see that to a certain point, because she sure thought that the hell was nothing. Like, why did she want to go to one so bad? I think, I mean, I'm not sure. I'm sure she wasn't going to go to party, but I think her idea of fun is what Matt says isn't, you know, fighting. Yeah. Getting into trouble. But the thing is even though how much he dislikes it, he still seems to, it's still a rush, and he's just so good at drawing that to him. I don't know.
Yeah, well, so, kind of also like when she took off with the horse, just to see, you know, what she could do with it. And, you know, it gave Matt fits, but at the same time, I think part of Matt also enjoyed that little episode too.
Exactly.
You know, oh, well, here I'm finally getting to do something that might be something like a courtship or whatnot. Because Matt did kind of play that role a little bit.
Yeah, do you think Matt's really enjoying it? See, I've always seen Matt as being a slave to Taviren, is what I call it. You know, he wants to go off and just drink and gamble and just relax. But he has to because, you know, being Taviren, he really has no choice. And, you know, he has to run after Tuan because he knows he has to marry her. He has to do all these things, and if he could not marry her, I think he would not marry her. So, I mean, I don't know. Maybe he secretly enjoys it, but I don't see it, personally.
I do. I like them it's together, possible. Even though, albeit if I was an actual character in the series, I would not want to be near her because she would drive me nuts.
Yeah, yeah.
But I enjoy reading about her, and I enjoy reading her character and how she thinks, and I love reading. I think that the Matt and Tuan stuff is some of my favorite things, and even though yes, he's reluctant and he isn't wanting, this isn't what he chooses, he doesn't want to fight, and he always says, oh, this is, I don't want to do this and blah blah blah, but I still think that when he's doing it and it's crunch time, I think there's a part of him that's really enjoying it. That's the impression that I get. It's just like he knows his stuff because of all the memories and things, but he still seems to, I don't know.
he does seem to thrive just underneath the pressure and stuff.
He just everything comes out, like he just seems to be like glowing. Like, not like you're doing something that's great, but you don't want to go out and kill all these people, but at the same time, it has to be a rush for him. I don't know.
It's like the one adage that they say earlier on is the older soldiers all say that, you know, being on the battlefield and being there, you know, when the pressure is on is how you know you're alive. And I think, yeah, part of that is how Matt reacts to a lot of situations. It's everything gets so exciting and so tense that, you know, he knows he's alive. And, you know, when it's all done, then he can go and enjoy a nice, you know, mug of ale somewhere with, you know, pretty girl on his knee. Well, not
but now,
I guess.
But now he
thinks
that Tuan is a pretty girl, where before when he first met her, he wouldn't have even thought of her as a woman. He thought she was a little girl. But now he wonders how he ever thought that. So she could be on his knee and he would be thinking he has a pretty girl on his knee because his whole perception of her has changed.
Yeah. Well, if he could get her there.
Yes. I'm sure someday in the future, I think right now that everything, like you mentioned before, is all she is thinking of her family. She's thinking of the Empress, which she doesn't know yet that she's dead, right?
Actually, I think at the very end of the book, she's gotten the news because she shows up with
ashes on her face.
Finds out
when she goes back, right. But she's thinking, I have to do this for my people. I have to do this for the Empire. Mm-hmm. And I think that's all she's thinking. She's thinking of ways to do what has to be done, because that's how she was brought up. You do what you have to do. And I think that when it's all over and done with, we might see, I don't know if we'll actually ever get to see any of this, but I think that she's not going to be like Elaine no matter what. She's not going to be loose and free, but I think that we'll see somebody that's different, that's a little bit lighter, and although has different, she views the world so differently because of who she is. I still think that I can see her and Matt going out and having fun and actually being in love, even though it would be different. I don't see them like sleeping 30 years down the road in different bedrooms.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I see them growing together.
It's possible.
There's a lot of relationships that start out because they were arranged, and they do end up falling in love, and I think that that'll be kind of what happens with them.
Well, that assumes
they do it for duty, but
yeah, that assumes
that they live.
Both of them, yeah, exactly. I was just gonna say that assumes that they live.
I just thought of that when you said that.
And I don't know. This is something that I'm curious about. It says in, or I guess it didn't say in any prophecies, but Rand asked the Aelfin or Eelfin, I can't remember which. He asked some of those fox people, how to win the last battle. And the East has to be united with the West or something like that. And he took it eventually to mean that he had to unite with the Shan Chan. I wonder what the Shan Chan are going to bring to the table that that Rand needs in order to win the last battle. Because I think, and this might be my own crazy theory. I might be able to save this, but I'm going to use it now. I think that Tuan has some sort of information. I think she's talked to somebody. You remember whenever she asked Matt if she's seen Ardor Hawkwing's face or something? She asked him that, and he was like, "What in the world do you mean?" You know, he's kind of scared by the question, and then he lies to her. But you know, she had known that, you know, she'd known that the guy who's seen Ardor Hawkwing's face is the person she'll marry. Well, I think she knows other things too, and I think it's about the last battle. And I don't know what it's going to be. It might be just some obscure piece of knowledge, you know, way back from, you know, the breaking or something. But I think she has she's got something to bring to the table besides just troops, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a good point. I don't know. I mean, it's kind of an odd thing because we also have to wonder. I mean, it's obviously it's going to take a while before Tuan is crowned empress.
That's true.
And, you know, and then she also has to think, you know, well, right now there is no heir to the throne. So, I mean, what does she do in that case? I mean, does she try to find Matt as quickly as possible so they can produce an heir? Or, you know, does she become empress and not really worry about it? You know, and then what happens if something happens to her in the interim? You know, does Matt end up being emperor of Shanshan or something?
Yeah, I think it depends if she's actually empress. I think that if she chooses him, that's it. Because he, being her husband, is now of the blood. Because even if you're not of the blood, you can be Shanshan in their empire. You can be raised to it. So I think if she actually were to pick him, I think that that's it. That's all there is to it. It's her choice.
Can she raise him to high blood, like high enough to where he can be emperor?
Yes.
Well, I think
In reading, which we were going to talk about it in the next episode, but in reading the world of Robert Jordan,
the white book,
it explains that it never used to be that way, but then they could reward people, and it could be somebody who's just a commoner or a merchant, and they can raise them to the blood. And so I think that if you're the empress and you marry somebody outside your station, or in this point, I mean, they're in a completely different world. he would be of the blood. And I believe that the way they explained it is that the Empress picks who is the heir. That's why all the children fight and are mischievous, and they plot against each other and kill one another by poison or whatever they do, because they want their mother to kind of, it's very strange, but it reminds me of the Dark One and all the Forsaken fighting to be
nameless.
Yeah.
You know, who they're going to pick, and they pick Deceitful and does all these sneaky little things. And but I think that if she was, or if she were to pick Matt, that would be it. It's her word. As long as she was Empress first.
Yeah.
Well, if she isn't crowned or whatever they do, Empress, then
put her on the crystal throne. Yeah, nobody's going to question her if she raises him. I mean, you can't question the Empress.
The Empress, that's it. She is the Empire Maid Flash, is what the words that they use in the book.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And, but.
Yeah, I think Matt's kind of been raised already by his marriage to her to a kind of a weird special kind of
the
blood. Because he's got the title Prince of Ravens.
Ravens.
Which is so cool.
Yeah.
Love that title.
That is cool. The thing, though, that's also is that it doesn't say anywhere in the prophecies, I don't think, that Rand has to bind Seanchan to him, except for what he's thinking. But it does say that he will bind the Nine Moons to him, which isn't the Empress. The Nine Moons is the title of the
heir.
Tuon, as being the heir, right? So if she's Empress, then he's not binding the Nine Moons anymore. He's binding the Empire.
Yeah, I guess
and
that makes
it
sense.
Says that he binds the Nine Moons, but maybe that's just in the title of that. Right now, Matt, the whole thing could be so confusing.
Yeah, he could bind her now, and then whenever she's bound to him, you know, then she becomes the Empress.
Yes,
she'd still be bound to him, but he didn't bind the Empire at the time. He bound the Nine Moons.
Yes, because I don't think, like you said, or I think Andrew said, that she's not like it's going to happen right away where she's going
to
be.
Yeah, it's true.
Because I think they said that she had to go back to Sandir first, which, you know, is a trip of months over the ocean unless, you know, they get an Aes Sedai to travel her there.
Yeah, if she ever do anything.
I don't think she would.
Anything that she would think is related to the power. But yet they let them use power as a weapon, but I don't think that she would actually travel.
Yeah, well, it would also mean giving the Seanchan traveling to teach them how to do it, and that's something that would be.
Well, unless an Ashaman did it.
Right, then they can't see it if an Ashaman.
No, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
Yep.
Maybe like they have an Ashaman open a hole and they're just gonna push her through.
Yeah.
But I can't less see her even letting one near her to do anything.
Yeah,
that's true.
I don't know. It's kind of. The other thing is what you were saying, Ben, about how you think because she knew things about Matt and knowing that he would know the face of Arthur Hawkwing, right? Am I saying that right?
Yep, Arthur Hawkwing.
And, but she was told that by a foretelling, correct? Wasn't she told that by her...
It might have been. Yeah.
It's kind of unclear as much as I read it recently. Tuon on the ship, the Victory of Kudrin, I think it was called or something. I don't remember. He had a Daemon called Lydia who he told to read her future. And it was really unclear whether it was a foretelling or whether this Lydia has something like men's viewings. But it was also odd because from everything we know of foretellings, you can't command it.
And that's exactly what she did.
It comes at random.
She said, tell me my future. And they think that they all can do this, that they can just tell future. They don't realize that it's something that happens every great once in a while, and that only so many, there are very few Aes Sedai or women that can channel that can do it. Either that, or for whatever reason, our side has culled it all out of them. I say our side. Randlin has culled it all out of them, and the Seanchan, for some reason, have a lot of foretellers that can do it on command, which I cannot see that happening.
It's
really
possible. Yeah.
Well, I mean, unless it's part of what the Adam does. I mean, maybe the way the Tarangriel works can induce foretelling in somebody. It's kind of
like
stretching
command,
it a little bit.
Because they command them, whatever they tell them to do, they have to do their own pain.
Yeah.
But I don't know how
that's
would
interesting
work.
Because Egwene is a dreamer, and she used, well, I guess that's not exactly the same thing as a foretelling, but it's pretty similar, some of the dreams that come true.
Yeah.
And she wore the Eidom for a long time. I don't know, maybe it's possible.
But it is very odd that Tuon told Lydia to read her future, or do her fortune, or however she said it, and she did. She did. Mm-hmm. And
then
yeah.
she had Lydia beat because she didn't
she
like
didn't
what
like
she heard.
It, yeah. And that's very, that is something to wonder about. Can they actually, I read it and I just read that book and I don't remember them saying anything about that. Maybe it was in the books, but didn't they say somewhere about how they think that all sure, but really they don't understand that it's only a select few that can? Do they make it up? I don't know.
I don't know.
It's odd to think that.
Well, I mean, I guess it kind of takes the power. I mean, it's one of those things that they kind of associate with a talent. But I think at some point, Mogedion had said something about it being even rare in the Age of Legends, and it was rare and sporadic even then. So we, you know, of all the different talents we see, foretelling is one of the weirdest ones because
yeah, it is.
There doesn't seem to be any rules governing it.
I know, to change the subject a little bit, there was at Dragonmount on the Fourth Age page where the podcasts are posted, there were some posters posting comments, and somebody had posted that they thought outside the Hell that Seleucia had channeled. Because do you remember outside the Hell when they were fighting and then Matt turns around and he realizes that that's why Tuon didn't leave, because they had also fought men. And then Tom says, I'm an old man and sometimes I see things that really didn't happen or really aren't there or something like that. And this poster had thought that he saw Seleucia channeling. But I don't know. I kind of was thinking that if it was anything at all, which they did not say anything, and he could be meaning anything. But I think it has something to do with Tuon as opposed to Seleucia, because Seleucia will protect Tuon. And Seleucia said to him after, what did you see? And he said, I saw nothing.
Mm.
So in my mind, it was something that maybe he was... But I can't see Tuon actually channeling, because she despises it so much and says that she will choose not to do it. Unless it was something... could it be possible that, you know, all those times Rand channeled and he didn't know it, or Nynaeve did and she didn't realize what she did?
Yeah.
We never saw any instances of her being sick or crazy or acting yeah. nuts, did we?
Well, I think that
or sometimes she could,
I guess a personal
kind of
opinion
like,
in her personality, that's tough to say. Well, yeah, I think that's only for the people who have the spark inborn in them, and the test will show that.
Yeah.
You know, if they take the test, and the other people would be able to sense that. And Tuon's not that, because otherwise she would have been marked as a Demani if she could,
yeah.
you know, pass the test. I can't imagine she would be able to hide it. You know, like Mogedion taught the three girls how to do. I can't imagine that she's been hiding it all this time. She'd have had to have done it when she was really, really young, and I just don't think that fits.
I just remember them saying when we first found out that the Eidom can work on both women, that they remember feeling like when they had the bracelet on, they could almost, when you get really good at it, you can almost see what they're doing and all that. So I thought maybe...
as they can.
She could subconsciously do something and not even realize she did it. I don't know. Maybe not, but I can't figure out what he would be talking about. Like, why would he say that? I mean, yes, okay, she can kick butt, and maybe she kicked butt and killed all these people, but Tom being as wise as he is and seeing the things that he has seen in his lifetime, I don't think he would be so surprised by this little woman going around killing men. Do you? Or... do you have any ideas of what he saw that he said that He saw nothing? What do you think it is?
I don't know what he saw, to be honest. I mean, it's possible that she could have channeled without realizing it, like you said, but was she one who controlled, I guess she did control Damani, so, it's possible that she could have done it, but, if she did, I don't think...
Something else that I'm missing that she could have... The way it's worded, it looks like it's something that's a clue to me, unless it's just nothing. Because why even mention it? Why would Robert Jordan write, "Sometimes I think I see things that I didn't see. I saw nothing." Like, why? What's the point in that? What, there had to have been something that we missed that Tom saw that was important.
I don't think we have enough information to really know yet, to be honest. I mean, I don't think we can know.
Yeah. The only other possibility I can see is Matt has consistently dismissed Seleucia for the exact reason people are supposed to dismiss her. They're supposed to think she's nothing but a maid. And if Thom happened to see her, you know, killing people and being all amazing bodyguard woman that she is, you know, Thom might go, "Well, you know, it's a better idea to kind of keep that secret." But it's...
Yeah, I thought of that too. I just thought that he wouldn't think it was...
I mean, it seems a weak reason for it.
Because if it was anybody else, any other man that hasn't been through all the things that we in these books have seen, I would think, okay, right, I could see that. But I don't see him being surprised at either one of them. Going all Chuck Norris and I don't know, like, you
oh,
know,
there's
I
an
just...
image I didn't need.
Sorry. I don't know. It's just interesting, and I guess we will not know unless it's something that we find out in last book. So, and with all the things that need to be wrapped up, I don't know. I hope that if it is something that we find out what it is.
The book's going to be 12,000 pages.
Oh, I hope so. 2,000 pages. I want it to be like he said, like you might not be able to pick it up. It'll be one
be
book,
awesome.
But you might not be able to pick it up. So.
Yeah.
And
need
I don't.
Need a wheelbarrow to carry it.
Yeah. That'd be great. Definitely. That would be. I know that it's going to be a big one. So. That's all that matters. So just to remind everybody that we will be discussing the Sean Chan. So if anybody wants to send us any crazy theories or theories that aren't so crazy, questions, comments, anything, or comments on something that has absolutely nothing to do with the Sean Chan, but just something else, we would love to hear from you. And then Ben has information on something else.
The Asmodian episode is coming. I know you've all been wanting it. We need to hear from you guys because, you know, we have our own theories. My theory is not all that defined yet because I'll be honest with you. I don't know who killed Asmodian, but I'm sure you do. So I want you to tell me who killed Asmodian. Email us, podcast@dragonmount.com. We want to hear your ideas on who killed him. We want to hear why. Don't just like say, "Oh, it was Rand." We want more than that. We want it was Rand because he went here, then did this, and then, you know.
It was Della.
So we're going to talk about all the theories, all the possible ways he could have died, and hopefully it'll be a pretty comprehensive show. So help us be comprehensive and send us your theory.
Yeah, and in that same vein, guys, feel free to give us email. We love hearing from you. Anything at all, any sort of feedback, anything. You can email us at podcast@dragonmount.com, or you can give us a voicemail. You can send that in to 1-888-333-7690. And who knows? You send us a voicemail, you could have your voice heard on the show like so many other people have, and it's always a great thing to do.
One thing that I want to mention is that I wasn't sure since I haven't had to call into the voicemail, but it seems to be that maybe you have to be inside the United States to use the phone number. So for anybody else that wants to send something, most computers nowadays come with some type of recording software, whether it be Microsoft or whichever you use. I'm pretty sure that most of them come with something to make it capable for you to make a recording. If you have just a cheap little mic, you can just record yourself and save it as an MP3, or pretty much, I think that we can open up pretty much any type of file, but MP3 would be smaller, and you can email that into us as well, and then we can play that on the show also. So if you're outside of the United States and would like to send us a voicemail. Yeah.
I think that's good.
That pretty much wraps up this week's show. So we would like to thank everybody for listening and have a good night.
Take care, guys, and see you around.
Walk in the light.
The Fourth Age podcast is brought to you by DragonMount.com. For advertising, please email advertising@DragonMount.com. The Fourth Age music is brought to us by Josh Needleman. You can visit his site at www.scriberocks.com. Thank you.